Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Welcome back, Bulls fans. Hope you enjoyed the weekend. I know Bulls basketball wasn't probably that enjoyable for you if you did sit down and watch the Lakers game on Friday and then the Bucks.
What are you talking about, Jordan? The tank is back on. It was a great weekend for Bulls fans.
Well, those sets of Bulls fans that were still holding out the inclination that the tank is still on, so this was exciting for them. But for the Bulls fans that were hoping to see a little bit more competitiveness out of the Bulls this weekend, you sort of didn't get that. Fred Hoiberg had explanations too for it post-game, and he didn't seem like he was too happy about this four-game losing streak. But before we get into all of that, Matt, what's going on? How are you?
Doing well, Jordan. I don't know if you've seen it on Twitter yet, but I spent a couple hours today going through some Joakim footage for the sake of a Twitter thread that I made, because I, you know, like everybody else on NBA Twitter this morning, saw that thing from Shams talking about Joakim and the Knicks and their kind of ugly, what's heading for a divorce, as they're going to try desperately to move his contract before the deadline. Good luck with that. And the fact that he's sort of taken a leave of absence from the team after a heated argument with their coach, Jeff Hornacek. And it just, you know, I've thought about Joakim frequently since he left Chicago, and sort of the rough patch that he's been in, what with the suspension and the DNPs and not really getting the shot that he wanted to, playing for his hometown Knicks. And so I just was feeling nostalgic. I was like, you know what, I'm going to go just make a thread of some of my favorite Joakim moments when he was with the Bulls. So it was sort of like a good and bad couple of hours, because, you know, a lot of it brought a smile to my face, and I also, you know, I feel for him. Like, obviously, there's not a whole lot of sympathy when a guy's making $72 million over 4 years to basically sit on the bench. But still, just for a guy who was always one of my favorite, not just like a favorite Bull, but a favorite Chicago athlete across the board with all of his time here. Yeah, it's tough to see him go through that.
Yeah, and I know there's been explanations there, and there's been sort of rumors out there that Joakim Noah and the Knicks are going to be open to trade talk possibilities. Like you said, good luck with trying to move his contract, and good luck trying to get Joakim Noah to agree to take some sort of buyout where he could go to any team he would want to. Like, this is the last payday that Joakim Noah is going to see, this large payday, and it's well deserved for the time that he was with the Bulls, and almost, you know, getting MVP votes in the 1 year that he was absolute dominating on defense.
Yeah, defensive player of the year.
Exactly. So it would be hard for me to understand if any team out there would take on his contract, and let alone that he would agree to some type of buyout unless they're paying him, I mean, close to almost all of that money that he's owed, because he's not going to get a contract anywhere near that length or that size ever in his career again. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess Bulls fans would always love Joakim Noah Love. I mean, he was an essential part of that core for 5, 7, 8 years while he was here with the Bulls. So there's mad love for Joakim Noah. I know other people love to hate him too around the league, but mad love for Joakim Noah here in Chicago. All right, right, let's dive into some of those games that the Bulls. So the Bulls took on the Lakers on Friday. We didn't get a chance to really talk about that because we had David Kaplan from ESPN 1000 on. If you didn't get a chance to go listen to that interview, I know it kind of came out late on Friday. And if you didn't get a chance to catch up on any of your podcasts this weekend, go back and listen to that episode. He's got a great Michael Jordan story, so you don't want to miss that. But let's dive into this Lakers game first real fast. So the score was 108-103. Obviously, the Bulls losing at home to the Lakers. Lonzo Ball not playing in this game. Chris Dunn still out after basically taking a landing with his face and, you know, having being under concussion protocol. So he didn't play as well. But from this standpoint, the score was a lot closer than what this game actually dictated. And the Lakers blowing a 12-point lead in the fourth quarter were able to manage and pull out a win against the Bulls. But the score was a lot closer than I thought the game actually played out.
The Bulls made it interesting late because the Lakers were up big and the Bulls managed to scrape together a little bit of a comeback. It was just it was a game where the Bulls kind of just seemed a little bit flat, and that's something that we've heard Hoiberg talk about, you know, after this Lakers game and also against after their matinee loss to the Bucks yesterday. But I mean, to me, the loss against the Lakers and then also the one against the Bucks on Sunday, I mean, it is painful to watch this Bulls team try to play the Fred Hoiberg offense without Chris Dunn. I mean, to me, that's what it really comes down to. The Lakers had an okay game. Like, they got a big, big game from Brandon Ingram. He had 25. Randall pitched in with 14. Jordan Clarkson had 19 off the bench. Like, some of the pieces for the Lakers, you know, played well. They were playing without Lonzo Ball, but they still put forth a good team effort. But from the Bulls' perspective, it's just this offense is not very efficient and not very confident, in my opinion, when they're trying to run things without Chris Dunn. I mean, no offense to Jaren Grant, but he's just not, he's not as good. There's a reason that Dunn won the starting job. He is better than Jaren Grant. And we saw that, you know, Jaren Grant had, in what was another winnable game earlier last week, a complete meltdown trying to even just get the ball across midcourt when he was met with a little bit of pressure. Like, it's things like that that you say, wow, well, like, I can't believe that we were actually rolling with Grant as our starter for a while. It was out of necessity because, remember, Dunn had that dislocated finger to start the season. But regardless of whether or not the shooters shoot well, and, you know, Markkanen had kind of an off night against L.A., Nico and Bobby both played pretty well off the bench. But other than that, there was, I mean, the starting lineup. Markkanen had 11, LaVine had 10 on 3 of 17, and they were only two in the Bulls starting lineup with double digits. Like, that is telling you right there how much they miss Chris Dunn in that starting line.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up too, because it's an obvious, and it's pretty obvious if you've been watching Bulls games since that Chris Dunn injury. It's just, this team looks different, and it seems like the Bulls, not to play on a joke here or anything, but the run with us tag that the Bulls use this season is so, it's so key to Chris Dunn in general. You could use that hashtag for Chris Dunn being in the lineup, because it seems like this Bulls team only runs well with Chris Dunn there. It's like he's gotten so comfortable with being able to run an offense, and it, for the first time in 2-3 years, we've actually had a competent point guard now that can run the offense, and it seems like guys buy into what he is doing, and the confidence he's been playing with was great. But it's a struggle now to watch these Bulls games without a point guard that can take over and just be average, you know, just be able to run the offense. And that was you and I's biggest thing about Jerian Grant, was that, yeah, he has spurts where he can play really well, and, you know, if he gets on fire, he can knock some shots down too, but he's not a starting point guard. He can't play starting minutes, and he doesn't know how to run an offense the way in which, like, Chris Dunn does. And it's a struggle for Fred Hoiberg, and you saw it over this weekend against the Lakers and against the Bucks, that when it comes down to crunch time, like especially with the Lakers game, the Bulls had a 95-92 lead with less than 4 minutes in that fourth quarter, and without a guy like Chris Dunn on the floor and being able to open up shots for other guys around, they don't have that closer that we've talked about, and we thought that maybe Zach LaVine could step up and be that guy. He was awful this weekend. It's sort of playing back to that 3-20 sort of vibe that I'm getting without Chris Dunn, in which I think should shock a lot of Bulls fans, that without Chris Dunn, now you're seeing really how this team is playing, how they're operating, how they're trying to run Fred's sets, and it's not working.
No, It's really not. I mean, it's as simple as that. And Fred talked after the loss to Milwaukee yesterday afternoon saying, you know, we're going to have ourselves a good hard practice on Monday today. You know, it's going to be like a training camp level of intensity kind of practice. My first thought was, oh, God. Training level, you know, training camp level of intensity practice. Let's hope there isn't, you know, Bobby versus Nico part two as we're trying to get Nico out of town. But secondly, my thought was, I don't know if that's really going to do much. Like, yeah, it's all great and fine and good to say, you know, we've been slumping recently. We've been coming out flat. We've been, you know, this losing streak's got to end. And maybe we just need a little bit of one of those, you know, tough, grinded out, you know, sweat some more kind of practices to get things back on track and to sort of light a fire underneath ourselves. Yeah, and that's great lip service, and hopefully the Bulls did have a good hard practice today. But I'm sorry, that's not going to change the fact that this team, without Chris Dunn running the starting offense, is a significantly worse team than when he's out there on the floor.
And with that, too, I mean, you just look at the Lakers game, you look at the Bucks game, too. I look at some of the things that were happening just outside the point guard play, and I looked at the night that Brandon Ingram had on Friday night, which scoring 25 points. And to be honest, Brandon Ingram has been really good this season, and I think for a lot of Lakers fans who were super down on him, were talking about being a possible trade piece to try and move him somewhere different that he wasn't fitting in. It's like now he's breaking out with the Lakers and being an important piece to that team, and being a guy that can score 25 points and lead your team to a victory when guys like that they're normally relying on guys like Kyle Kuzma off the bench or Lonzo Ball, who's absent, and guys like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who was brought to the Lakers to literally be a scorer, for a guy to be able to take over like Brandon Ingram did on Friday night is crazy. Like 10 for 18, 25 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, and 1 steal. So it like brought me, it's not like this big epiphany or anything that I had over the weekend watching the Bulls. And if you're a Bulls fan who's been tracking these games, watching these games, you know it. The Bulls desperately need some wing players. And you can see it in, you know, we had this conversation. We were talking about Denzel Valentine, and he was asked to play in a small forward role when Zach LaVine was out and playing the bulk of the minutes. But the Bulls need to find a guy that can play legit defense in that wing position, because the Bulls over and over again are getting killed by teams' wing players and players that, you know, whether it's a star or it's not, like it seems like the wing players are having such good games that the Bulls desperately need help. So maybe that's somebody that they can go and look for. I don't know if there's somebody out there that the Bulls could make a trade for, maybe possibly in a Nico deal, which we've talked about, like Mo Harkless needing a new start in Portland, but desperately the Bulls need wing help.
They do. There's no getting around that. I mean, you look at assuming that for the foreseeable future that LaVine for the most part is a guy that Hoiberg wants to play, intends to play at the two. I mean, you could play David Nwaba maybe if you're going real small, because I mean, you talk about a guy who has the ability on the defensive end to guard all five positions. And yeah, I think David Nwaba is emerging as one of those guys in the NBA. But as far, I mean, he is, you can't call Nwaba a 3-and-D wing because there's no three. The three part of that is missing. The guy, I can't remember who, I think it was Mark Strootman for NBC Sports, either yesterday or today, put up a great article looking at Nwaba's numbers offensively and where he's shooting, or better yet, not shooting. I think the guy, like, only Ben Simmons has taken fewer three-point attempts than Nwaba this season. So you need a guy who can play that position. And like you said, Jordan, the Bulls kind of don't really have that right now. As far as somebody they might try to target before the deadline to address that need, you also wonder about what we've heard, that the Bulls don't really want to take on a guy who has extensive money due to him on you know, two or even one more year on a contract. Like, that's why we're hearing that there are certain roadblocks between the Bulls and the Jazz in a potential deal, because they didn't want to take on the second year remaining on Alec Burks's deal. So if the Bulls are really that desperately trying to avoid taking on a contract and a trade, they might have to look towards the draft to address that need at the wing. And there are certainly some good wing players in this draft, specifically somewhere in that like 7 to 13 range where the Bulls might find themselves drafting.
Yeah, and so to kind of touch on that with the Milwaukee game as well, it was kind of funny. Our friends over at Locked On Bucks sort of did a recap over at their SB Nation site, brewhoop.com, talked about the Bulls sort of coming out flat as along with the Milwaukee Bucks on Sunday afternoon. But you look at that game, and I looked at this Bucks team who's been sort of struggling, and now with the Jason Kidd firing happening over the past week, they talked about guys that had stepped up for them, people like Jason Terry and Sterling Brown. And to me, that's kind of embarrassing when you've got guys like Jason Terry, who was around when the NBA was in the 70s, and you got Sterling Brown, who's emerged as a pretty solid player for the Bucks, who I don't think that they really realized was a piece that could be sort of a guy that can hit knockdown threes in bursts. But I thought they brought an interesting point up when they talked about the Bulls struggling to really play up to the pace that they normally did. And this goes back to our conversation about Chris Dunn being sort of that guy that's pushing the pace and pushing guys to sort of all buy in at once. And we didn't sort of see that. And then maybe that plays to the factor of guys like Zach LaVine coming out and trying to do too much. I mean, you saw it against the Lakers. He was 2 for 11 against the Bucks on Sunday. And then he was 3 of 17 against the Lakers on Friday night. So obviously not what you hoped for when Chris Dunn went out. You were hoping that maybe Zach LaVine would step up and sort of be a little bit more consistent, but we can kind of get into that in a little bit. But I just want to get your thoughts overall on this Bucks game on Sunday too.
Yeah, it was obviously another, as you mentioned, a rough night for Zach LaVine. Maybe he was trying to do a little bit too much, and no, you expect some poor shooting nights from a guy who is playing for the first time in a year. He's still trying to get his legs underneath him. There was definitely a couple of times during that game against Milwaukee yesterday where you saw LaVine kind of panting and, you know, leaning over, breathing heavy on his way to the bench, checking out. So that's still clearly an issue for LaVine, and that might be a reason why he's struggling, whether it's the conditioning and the, you know, combined with the fact that he's trying to do a little too much and push a little too hard. And a lot of his shot selection, I think, in the last couple of games and really overall since his return, has not been great. His shot selection's been less than stellar. So I think that was an element to this game against Milwaukee. As you pointed out, also the lack of pace. It's something Hoiberg talked about almost immediately when he was doing his post-game comments, saying, you know, without Dunn, we really miss that speed that we get when we're trying to initiate our offense. And this Bulls team, when it isn't playing with pace, is not a very good offensive team. I think that's pretty cut and dry. I will say, just to wrap up my thoughts on the Milwaukee game, to whoever it is out there, if you're still listening to our show, who rags on us for being Denzel haters, hey, look who had a great game off the bench. Denzel, in 30 minutes, shot 8 of 12 for 18 points, 2 of 6 from downtown, grabbed 5 boards, dished out 4 assists, and 0 turnovers. So there you go. And a lot of like weird little like fluky. He's got this semi floater with like a really low release point that I don't know how it works, but he drained like 5 or 6 of them yesterday. Really,
he made 5 in the first quarter. He made 5 of those floaters in the first quarter.
Yeah, really crazy stuff. But so, hey, there you go. Another nice game from Denzel.
Yeah, and I like that. I like too that he's come out publicly this week at least saying that he wants to sort of carve out a role on the bench and be an important factor coming off with that second unit, which is fantastic. And I think if he buys into that and being able to do that, he can be, you know, he can turn into a legitimate piece that can play, you know, role minutes for a Bulls team that's trying to compete. And with everybody else that we have on this roster, Denzel Valentine is still trying to find himself too. I hate to look back at last season and what he did last season, because I don't feel like he was played in the right role last year, and he was asked to do things that he's not normally used to doing. Like he had said at the press conference at the end of the year, he said he was sort of asked to just stand in the corner and do nothing but shoot threes, and that's not really his game. And that's why I was more excited to see what he could do with the unit, being able to play more towards his style in his game and being able to run an offense. And we did see sort of that now with the struggle of being able to find somebody that can run an offense. I mean, they use Zach LaVine at times. They were using Denzel Valentine at times. And I mean, even Lauri Markkanen and Nico Mirotic, when they were on the floor, they were bringing the ball up in possessions too. So I think the more important and the more alarming situation as this goes on is the fact that the Bulls don't have any legitimate point guards that can step in Chris Dunn's absence and play important minutes. And that's kind of scary to me. And that also makes me kind of think like, all right, if Dunn's going to be out for longer than 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever it's going to be, and the Bulls haven't really set a timetable on his return, and Cameron Payne's looking like he's closer and closer to coming back, I mean, he can't be any worse than what Archie Diacono or whatever the else that they could sign in free agency for a veteran guy to come in and step into that role. So I'm crossing my fingers. I don't have any high hopes for Cameron Payne at all, but I'm crossing my fingers that maybe he can come in and show us something, because he's going to be around here till at least next season, unless the Bulls find a way to deal him. Like I would hope for the Bulls' sake that he could come in and something happened in the stretch that he was out, that he could come in and do something and be halfway productive. I mean, am I too crazy to think that?
Are you talking out of your ass right now, Jordan? Or wait, just let me double check. You're talking about campaign right now?
Talking
about campaign coming back from this like year and a half long mystery leg injury that's got him, you know, scooting around the Advocate Center on some weird halvesy kind of bike. And you're hoping that he can come back into this Bulls rotation and provide half of something? Half of an NBA player is too lofty an expectation for campaign. I'm sorry, and I'm not sorry. There is no way you can expect him.
Archie Diacono, though.
Unless you're talking about campaign contributing to the Bulls by getting minutes, courtesy minutes, grace minutes, or maybe the front office telling Hoiberg, hey, play campaign. Thus contributing to losses in the loss column and getting the tank back on track. That is the only way that campaign can contribute to this team. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. You can't be serious when you're talking about hoping. Look, I get it. Jaren Grant is not an NBA starting point guard. Ryan Archie Diacono is not even a bench point guard. David Nwaba is the best of the options available right now. But look, I mentioned some of his upside earlier in this episode, but he is not a point guard who can also score. Like, he's great at pushing the pace and running the floor, and he's a great cutter. He moves very well off the ball, and he can take it to the lane with authority if the lane is open. But he's not a combo point guard who can score in traditional point guard ways as well as find open looks. Like, he is not a point guard in that sense. So even all that said, I would take any of them over campaign.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I had to bring it up because we don't talk about it other than stabbing jokes at Cameron Payne and whether they're all accurate and whether they're all deserving. I mean, that's up to the listener to decide and however you feel about Cameron Payne. But the realistic thing is he's going to be on this roster for another year. So, I mean, I just have to believe that he can be better than Ryan Archie Diacono, who goes out there and looks lost and doesn't score in 30 minutes of play, doesn't score a single basket in 30 minutes of play. 30 minutes. How are you an NBA player and can't score one basket? So to me, like, maybe it's just desperation at this point too. Is like, we want Chris Dunn back so bad that I'm hoping that if campaign is set to return soon, sometime in the next few weeks, that he would step in and maybe surprise us a little bit. I'm not saying that I'm hoping for it. I'm not saying that is going to happen, but as a Bulls fan and some other Bulls fans out there, I'm hoping that there would be some opportunity, and we're obviously going to get looks at him too, because like I said, he's going to be here till next year. The Bulls don't want to say that this was the biggest mistake that they ever made, but I don't know. I guess I just have to hope at this point with zero expectations and maybe be pleasantly surprised.
Look, I think you won't ever hear them admit it, but Paxson and Gar both know that that was a terrible trade. Maybe the worst trade they've ever made while being in charge of this Bulls organization. I mean, it was that bad. yeah, you were trying to get rid of guys who were probably going to be leaving for nothing. Well, in Taj's case, and then with Doug, it was, well, he didn't really work out. And you get two contract balancing half-season loners in Laverne and Morrow, and Payne is the thing you're excited about, and you gave them a pick. Like, you know, we don't need to go over it. It's been beaten to death, but it deserved to be beaten to death. Right. It was the worst trade in the world. It was a terrible, terrible trade. So,
absolutely.
Look, I mean, if the Bulls front office plans to nudge Fred towards at least giving campaign a look when he is, whenever this might be, ready to play, all right, I mean, fine, give the kid a look. And Paxson, if you really are determined to get yourself back into the mix of that 2018 lottery, because that was originally part of the plan, and we've heard that recently, that, look, you know, they're encouraged and pleased with this winning that they've been doing, but they know that it's contrary to the plan. So to me, that is the only logical explanation for if at some point in February or March you see the Bulls giving campaign real minutes, not 4 minutes in garbage time minutes, but real minutes, that's the reason. It's not because they still have faith in his ability to be an NBA player. Because if they have faith in his ability to be an NBA player after just knowing from all angles that they got shredded on that trade, then they're even dumber than I thought.
Well, I can play this to you and to the fans that are just going to completely disregard campaign being a Chicago Bull, is that, isn't it sort of a win-win? So if Cameron Payne comes back and plays higher than your expectation, which is zero, and or if he comes back and he's still awful and helps contribute to some more losses, that gives you some more hope in the tank process and being higher up there. So it's kind of, I would feel it's kind of a win-win for fans that just want to completely disregard him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong about the win-win. I think one of those is certainly more likely than the other. We'll just leave it at that.
All right. So as we go through the show here, I want to get to Zach LaVine real fast and sort of talk about his numbers. As his minutes restriction has been sort of lifted now and it keeps progressively getting larger and larger. I went and took a look at his first four games and compared it to his last four games. And so in his first four games, obviously he was shooting a lot better. He was scoring the bucket, and like we thought that maybe he hadn't missed a stride. And from what he was doing with the Timberwolves, and maybe when he got injured and not playing basketball for a whole year, we were pleasantly surprised at the things that he was being able to do. And his numbers sort of played to that factor. But I thought what's concerning about Zach LaVine over these last four games is, number one, he was 5 for 28 over this weekend. 5 for 28 this weekend. So take that into consideration. Also, I thought it was kind of troubling to see him force shots, especially early on in the shot clock, and trying to be the guy that's playing isolation and score off of that, in which I think a huge contributing factor to this is not having Chris Dunn there. And I think you're not going to see the types of shot selection that Zach LaVine was taking this weekend or even over this four game losing streak that you do when Chris Dunn's in that lineup. And I think Zach LaVine's going to offer a lot more shot. He's going to offer a lot more offensively once he gets a competent point guard to be able to feed him. But one of the things that I think it was sort of troublesome for me was that he's taking almost 50% of his shots between the shot clock of 24 and 15. So in the first 9 seconds over these four games, these last four games in this four game winning streak, he's taking 42% of his shots in the first 9 seconds of the shot clock. And the other thing that bothered me too is he's taking 35% of his shots with seven or more dribbles. So that tells me right there that not only is he looking to score early and often, which is fine. Like in Fred's system, it's fine to want to put up as many shots as you can, but it's troubling that he's playing so much isolation by himself. And it showed this weekend that he isn't having so much success with that. And I don't know if that's just a contribution to him trying to get back into literal NBA mode, where it's different that you're training every day and you're working out, but actually getting back to live games and travel and all of that is kind of playing into the factor. But what did you overall see this weekend from Zach LaVine, or even in this four game losing streak, since he's come back and since he's gotten more minutes and more looks?
Yeah, Jordan, you're not wrong. I mean, it's clear that in these last couple of games specifically, we have seen more ISO and dribbling and poor shot selection from LaVine than we'd care to see. And, you know, I mentioned it briefly earlier. You got to give him at least, you know, partial pass considering where he is in his comeback from a torn ACL. Again, torn ACL, and he's played, you know, not 10 games yet since coming back. So you have to be a little bit patient there. I think that LaVine, before this injury, especially as he was, you know, close to being a 20 points per game scorer with Minnesota last season, his third season before the injury, is a better isolation player than what we saw this weekend. I think is a better isolation scorer than what we saw this weekend. But to your point, that's not exactly what you want from him, ideally, in a Fred Hoiberg offense. I think it's been sort of put upon him the last couple of games, and maybe he feels like he needs to do more without Chris Dunn out there, with a lacking point guard in Jaren Grant. So all of that collectively together, he's feeling the pressure of coming back and getting back into game shape. He is feeling the pressure of being the go-to scorer now with and the go-to offensive creator with Dunn out. And, you know, all of that kind of combines into LaVine is feeling the pressure to do too much. And because of it, we saw some ugly basketball this week. I think, I mean, like, that's basically how I saw it. And as of right now, it is not a giant concern.
Yeah, I would agree with you, too. And I think it's just sort of a, it's kind of a just, you've got to let him sort of mold himself back into this roster and be able to sort of work those kinks out. Like you had said, it's like, the expectation for me is high with Zach LaVine, and I didn't expect him to come back and just light the world on fire. Like, I would have been amazed if he did that. And to your point, too, guys that are coming off of ACL injuries and how they perform in their first year, there was a really good article written up about guys and comparing guys in their first year back, and it's pretty much overwhelmingly saying that guys don't have a very good year, you know, in that first year returning from those injuries. And so I think it plays to that factor. It also plays to the factor too, like I said, without Chris Dunn, I think teams are putting more pressure not only on Lauri Markkanen, but also putting more pressure on Zach LaVine, because they know he's a pure scorer and he can score. And once he gets hot, you know, he's knocking down baskets. But without Chris Dunn to sort of facilitate things and being another threat to drive to the basket, I think Zach LaVine is just, he's going through a tough stretch right now. And I don't expect his numbers to be as bad as they are through this 4-game stretch. I expect it to go somewhere in the middle of what he did in the first 4 games to this 4 games now. And obviously this is a very small sample size in 8 games. But another thing that sort of caught me off guard, I guess, was the fact that he's taking so many shots. He's taking so many shots with defenders tight on him. So NBA Stats does a really good job of breaking all of this down, and you can go there and look up literally any stat for any person ever and find out all the defensive measurements, all the offensive measurements that you want, and stats and details. But I thought this was pretty cool. This is a pretty cool stat to kind of, I guess, evaluate the way the shots that Zach LaVine is taking and what kind of defense is playing on him. So the closest defender in these 4 games that Zach LaVine's been taking, the most frequent shot is a defender pretty tight on him. So that's between 2 and 4 feet from him. His shot frequency for that is about 31%. So that's the majority of shots that he's looking to take. He's shooting 41.2% from there. So that's actually not too bad. That's pretty good. The one that troubles me is the fact that he's not knocking down wide open shots. So he's taking open shots and wide open shots. So that's between 4 and 6 feet and 6 feet and plus. So he's wide open there. So combined between those two, his frequency is 50% of his shots are open. In 4 to 6 feet of space, he's only knocking down 21.4% of those shots. In wide open space, he's knocking down 35.7% of those shots. So to me, that's kind of like, okay, maybe he's just trying to get his rhythm back, but wide open shots you should be knocking down, especially the scoring ability that Zach LaVine has. The other thing that was troubling is his 3-point percentage when he's wide open. He is shooting 14.3% when he's 4 to 6 feet, which is pretty decently open for a guy of Zach LaVine's size, shooting 41.7% from a wide open position, which in those attempts, he's only taken about 2 attempts from 4 to 6 feet with a defender on him. And he's taken about 3 times a game with being wide open. So I don't know, I guess I have a little bit of worry that the shots that he is making is coming with tight defending. And I don't know if that's just luck or if that's shots being knocked down or what it is, but it's a little bit troubling that he's struggling with wide open shots that you would think he would make.
Small sample size, Jordan. I mean,
that's very small sample size.
That's all I got to say about that. I'm not worried about that yet, but I do want to mention the elephant in the room. You talked about tight defending recently at the end of that thought, which got me thinking, we haven't even talked about the most troubling thing with Zach LaVine since his comeback, and that is on the defensive side, he is just as bad as we all were fearing. I mean, he was talking at practice today. I think Casey Johnson had a quote or two from him about his confidence on the defensive end and that, you know, in isolation situations, you know, guarding guys off the dribble, like he feels very good about his abilities. But, okay, maybe I'm not granting that statement of his to be 100% accurate. What's even more glaringly obvious as far as a team defender and when it comes to switches and pick and roll situations and, you know, keeping an eye on his man while also keeping an eye on the ball and the ball movement. I mean, I've seen him in countless situations already be completely lost on the defensive end. And, you know, we all knew that when we got LaVine, we were getting a young, crazy athletic talent with some offensive upside and a guy who really didn't play a lot of defense. And that's what I've seen so far, and that to me is, you know, obviously you hope that as this young Bulls core continues to build, you can find guys who can mask the defensive deficiencies of their teammates. And when the Bulls were, you know, contenders back in, you know, the early 2010s with those great Tibbs defenses, there were weak links on those defenses. Cough, cough, Carlos Boozer, cough. And you find good coaches on the defensive side, good defensive minds find ways to mask the defensive problems. Zach LaVine is going to be a defensive problem.
Yeah, and that's also a good point to bring up for Bulls fans who say, you know what, well, you know, like when Chris Dunn comes back, maybe you could shift Zach LaVine to the three and you can play Justin Holiday at some time at the shooting guard, or you can move Nwaba at the three and have Zach LaVine play the two. Like, to me, that's not a good idea, and Fred Hoiberg seems like he's even seen it, and like that's a terrible idea. Just because you said how bad he is at defending, and that's not to say that, you know, a 22-year-old can't figure out his defense, but I think it's a glaring flaw, and he is as bad as we thought he was going to be on the defensive end. I'll just bring this one quick stat up about Zach LaVine before we finish up here: is that in the 7 games that he has played, defenders are shooting 47.7% against him, and he's allowing 58.3% of those shots to go down between 3 and 2 pointers. And the most glaring out of all of them is his defense inside the perimeter, which is awful right now. I mean, guys are making 71.4% of their baskets from less than 6 feet, less than 10 feet. They're making 66.7% of their shots. So like you said, I mean, there's obviously room to grow there, but that's definitely a glaring error, and it looks even worse when Zach LaVine isn't knocking down shots.
It definitely looks bad, but again, to me, this is still small sample size. On the offensive end, with the struggles that we've seen this weekend and overall since his comeback, you hope that, you know, if Chris Dunn comes back and he can get, you know, back into a more of a groove playing with, you know, the point guard who's meant to be leading this offense, you can start to see some of those bad shot selections dissipate and good Zach LaVine on the offensive end will start to emerge. And Bulls fans, by the end of this season, we'll feel good about giving him a contract this summer.
All right, so to finish up here, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that we've been hearing from national guys, beat reporters, about the Bulls, something around the trade deadline, updates on other guys like Chris Dunn and Nico Mirotic. What have you been hearing? What'd you hear over this weekend? And what kind of stood out to you? What stood tall for you in reading things, hearing things this weekend?
Well, I feel like the overarching theme of NBA talk and NBA columns this weekend was we're all kind of sitting here waiting. Everybody's a little bit clenched as that deadline gets closer, but everybody's only half clenched because everybody's expecting kind of a dud this season, right? It's like everybody is wondering, what are the Cavs going to do? The Cavs are going to do something. They have to do something to address the team chemistry issues, the defensive disaster. They're going to do something. You know, is Lou Williams going to move? Is DeAndre Jordan going to move? You know, are the Jazz going to become sellers and, you know, jump into the tank? Are the Pistons going to do the same thing? If so, are those teams that the Bulls are still trying to deal with? And I think people just seem to forget that most of the deadline action happens right up before the actual deadline happens. Like, I know that's a silly sounding sentence, but everybody's wondering, like, you know, why is Nico still in town? Why hasn't the trade happened yet? Why? Now. Guys, we still have more than a week. It is January 29th. We have until February 8th. We know, you know, and this is more of a Bulls-centric thought as far as, like, national storylines for the deadline. But when it comes to the Bulls specifically, we know what Paxton and Foreman want. They want a first-round pick specifically for Nico. And they're going to try until the deadline, or until they have a different offer that they feel is, all right, this is the best we're going to get, and time's running out, they're going to keep holding out for that. So I feel like, you know, there's a lot of talk this weekend about these potential trades happening, and this might happen, and this might happen, but maybe none of this happens. And my advice there for Bulls fans specifically would be, yeah, it might take a while. It might not happen tomorrow or the next day or the next day. I still think that the Bulls front office is determined to trade Nico. I think they are still interested in the idea of trading Robin Lopez because they do want to get back into that lottery. That is what they want. And they'll try to make it happen. But, hey, it's the deadline. A lot of stuff will happen on February 6th, February 7th, and leading up to the midnight hour on February 8th. Not literally midnight. It's usually at, like, what, 3 o'clock Eastern time? But, yeah. So, you know, that was my take from the NBA this weekend. Everybody's like, what the hell? Why isn't anything happening? Because we still have more than a week left to go.
Yeah, I think the only thing, two things that I picked up real quick was, one, that there were a couple reports out there that the Bulls were interested in Rodney Hood. So, I mean, there isn't too much traction going on there, obviously, outside of if the Bulls were to strike a deal with Utah, that would be one of the players that they would be interested in. So Rodney Hood could be a possibility there coming to the Bulls if that does happen. There was that wild article, too, on ESPN, which I'm not even going to bring it up because it's such a stupid, asinine trade discussion about Robin Lopez and Nico Mirotic going to Cleveland for Kevin Love, Iman Shumpert, and the Brooklyn pick. Like, if you're reading that article and getting excited, please don't, because that doesn't make any sense. And Cleveland, like I told people on Twitter this weekend, is like, do you really think Cleveland has it set in stone that they know whether or not LeBron's going to leave after this season? No. So why would they give up the Brooklyn pick? Why would you sacrifice and set your roster back on rolling the dice that LeBron will stay for the future and trade away that pick for something to please him right now? Like, I feel like there's other moves that Cleveland can make without having to give up that Brooklyn pick. And like I said, too, unless Cleveland is getting an all-star in return, they're not trading that Brooklyn pick. They're not. It's just pure factor. Like, they're not going to. And especially for a deal with Robin Lopez and Nico Mirotic. Like, come on. Let's be serious here. Like, I don't know if that was a troll move or not, or if that was dead serious on what Cleveland would be willing to do. But, like, I know that Kevin Love, there's been some riff with Kevin Love and Isaiah Thomas and all of that, but really, like, Cleveland wouldn't stand a chance if they traded away Kevin Love. They wouldn't get back to the finals if they moved Kevin Love at this point. So to me, like, if you're reading that ESPN article, just take it with a grain of salt, just kind of laugh at it and say, okay, yeah, that's on to the next one. The other thing I want to talk about too is Nick Friedell real quick. He was on our friend Nick Friedell. He was on ESPN 1000 this afternoon, and he just quickly had mentioned that Nico Mirotic was sitting out with a lower right leg strain, so he did not practice today. So that could be interesting to sort of monitor, as well as there was no real update on Chris Dunn.
Yeah, I think from what we heard from Friedell this afternoon, don't be surprised if Dunn is out another week. I'm pretty sure I saw somebody tweet out earlier today that he is with the team. So I'm not sure if that means he will be going with the team too, because they've got some road games coming up, Portland and the Clippers later this week on Wednesday and Friday, I believe. So I doubt you'll see Chris Dunn play in either of those games, and they're going to be cautious. No reason not to be, especially the Bulls have strung together four losses, and you laugh if you want to, but Paxton likes that. You know, like, you know, we talked about how it's tough to try to watch this Bulls team run their offense without Chris Dunn, and we all know how important he is in his absence. You can see that. But I don't think they're going to rush him back anytime soon. And then to the other thoughts that Friedel had about Nico, I don't think that there was any conspiracy stuff there about how he was inactive at practice today because of a lower leg thing. I don't think it's a huge panic button thing to say, oh my gosh, you know, a team that was going to trade for Nico saw that and now is, you know, getting cold feet. I mean, that doesn't sound very serious to me. I guess of note is that Friedel did say that he was surprised that Nico is still here. And he also, from talking to Nico and people in his camp, Nico is surprised that he's still here. But like I said, I mean, to me, it's all about the fact that there is still a lot of time left on that, you know, that shot clock, so to speak. More than a week for the Bulls to still get this deal done. Yeah, and you know, we all know that these things can happen very quickly, whether it's on draft night or days leading up to the deadline or deadline day. Maybe you don't get a tweet from Shams or Woj or you know, one of the local beat guys, and maybe there's nothing. Maybe it's all of a sudden, oh, the Bulls and so-and-so are in serious talks about XYZ players. And then 2 minutes later, there's an updated tweet, and then 5 minutes after that, it's boom, deal's done. And it came out of nowhere. So that could still easily happen.
That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us at Locked On Bulls on Twitter, at Jordan C. Nelly, at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We are live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Remember, we are giving away tickets to the Timberwolves and Bulls game on February 9th. That's Friday, February 9th. You and a lucky guest, if you do get picked to win, will join Matt and I for Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, Tom Thibodeau's return to the United Center. More importantly, Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson for the first time since they were traded. All you have to do is take 30 seconds, go leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite platform to listen to podcasts, screenshot that, send it to us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com, and you'll be automatically entered to win. I think we're going to pull that lottery and pick our winner sometime at the end of the week, so keep updated. Make sure you're checking your email or your Twitter, wherever you've submitted your screenshot to us, and we'll pick that winner later on this week. But for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great Monday.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.